This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Andrew Hopkins passes down low to Hyman, trying to backhand chance. Rebound, they score. It's McDavid at the side of the net. Here's McDavid, right wing to the Vancouver line. Rink wide pass, left circle. Kulak waits, shoots, scores. Brett Kulak along the ice. I think that went between the legs of Kevin Lankin, and the Oilers are running it up now. It's 6-2.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Janmark passes back to center for Connor Brown with speed into the left wing. Brown shoots, he scores. Lankinen got a piece of it off the glove, but it finds its way past him. And it's 7-2 Edmonton. Connor Brown has his second of the game.
Yeah, when it rains, it pours.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks get absolutely trounced by the Edmonton Oilers 7-3 tonight on home ice. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Douglas Lake Equipment and on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Keep getting your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. We are going to bring in Brett Festerling into the conversation coming up in just a moment here on the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. And it's one of those games where we went into the third period. The Canucks were down one goal, 3-2. They came back from a 3-0 deficit, which they were in the second period, to make it a one-goal game. We talked about it heading into the third, that here's a chance now. You're down a goal. You're back in this game. A big effort is needed in the third period. And as soon as you get into the third, yeah, maybe a one call goes against you. I know a similar call on the other end at the end of the second on Quinn Hughes didn't get called. It gets called in the third period on Tyler Myers. They go on the power play, and that's when Edmonton makes Vancouver pay again. And it was the struggle of the night, Brett, protecting the front of the net. And a couple times, Lankinen made a great save. Pedersen stopped McDavid from scoring. But they were dominating down low, especially on the man advantage.
Yeah, Edmonton does a really good job of getting pucks to the net, especially that power. But they take what's kind of open there, and then they drive it there, and then it's chaos. And if you haven't set those sticks and body beforehand, then it just becomes trying to find something, and you're just behind the eight ball. And that seemed like kind of the whole third period, really, for the Canucks.
Yeah, and just it was seldom the first guy on the net front. It was the secondary chance, the third chance, and there's Draisaitl scoring a goal, right? There's McDavid scoring a goal, and it's just happened time again. And look, that's kind of what they do, right? They generate so much chaos there with Zach Hyman, and usually the focus gets diverted because you're looking at McDavid, you're looking at Draisaitl, and suddenly the puck gets there, and everyone collapses on Hyman, and someone's available on the weak side there as that puck bounces free.
No, exactly. I mean, he painted the perfect picture. It goes there, and then everyone's like, oh, no, because you're focused on the outside. And those skills guys, I mean, even Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is in that. And then, they collapse, and those guys are so good at just staying patient on the side of the net. It squirts out, and those guys are so good in that area.
Yeah, they really were, and the Canucks really struggled. And, you know, we were kind of joking, maybe the Canucks should address one more defenseman, because clearly seven weren't good enough at really defending the front of the net. But it's not always down to only defensemen. It's also what the forwards do helping out. And, you know, on the first goal, it's a bit of a scramble. I guess Oman, if he can go over to Draisaitl, maybe he can help out too. But even on the goal to make it 4-2, JT kind of tips the puck over too. Like it's a bit of an unlucky play as well. So it's not all about bad defending. Sometimes the puck just doesn't find you. But when you end up going down, and it seemed like everything was going in for Edmonton, I just didn't like how, you know, maybe it's harsh to say they folded or whatever happened in the third. But I'm sure we'll hear from the head coach. He won't be overly happy with how the game really unraveled once they got the fourth goal.
Yeah, exactly. Unraveled, I think, is a perfect word. I feel like your emotions as a player get so high, and then you want to keep that kind of pressure up and continue it. You get the call against, and it kind of deflates everything a little bit. Yeah. And then they just never found anything really to get them inflated again. It felt like they just kind of kept getting pounded there and couldn't change it around. So I felt like the Canucks really sagged on the blue line and neutral zone. They got hit with a lot of speed in the third.
Well, because that's what the coach talks about too. When they're at their best, they're good at gapping, which he says keeping that gap with their opposition. And once you give Edmonton space, that's just inviting pressure.
There were moments where it just felt, you know, meek. Like the 2-0, okay, are you going to respond here? 3-0 comes real fast. And you think the barrage of goals there after the power play goal. Look, it's still a two-goal game. it's not impossible to work your way back in the third period, but 5-6-7 came pretty quick there for the Oilers, and there was those two moments at 2-0 and at 4-2. How are you going to respond? And in both instances, the Oilers were able to get the next one and start racking it up, obviously.
Yeah, and that's where they're so dangerous, is they just seem to stack those up. They feel it, and they really ride those offensive momentum and that speed. It seems like I said, especially that far side from this booth, left wing, it just seemed like they were getting so many wingers with speed, and then everybody was driven back. And then once the Oil get the zone, they're so good at creating chaos, and Bouchard and Ekholm, and everybody's in and out, and it's so hard to get the puck back, really.
It's just those moments, though, where I think, like last year, they took so much pride in all the little details and just being mentally strong and tough. And you think there's so much focus at the start of the season, and they crushed it, and it almost gives you confidence going into the rest of the season, and you build upon strength. And this year, look, they're strong, right? Like, they have a good team. They'll be fine. But we haven't necessarily seen them, you know, in key moments just grab a game and say, no, like, we're going to salt this one away. We're not going to have drama throughout the course of the game. It's shown up in flashes against, you know,
I thought the Kings
Anaheim.
It was
better against the Kings.
I thought it was pretty good against the Kings. But you can also say they didn't put together one game to another, right?
Yeah. It just hasn't looked the same as strong as it did last year.
Yeah, I don't – to me, it doesn't look live or die by the system like last year.
Yeah.
Like last year was like,
there was so much
way.
Urgency all of the time.
Yeah.
And again, it's a hard standard to live by. And last year, I would imagine their pride was almost wounded going into last year, saying, okay, we got to correct some things. Yeah. And there was far more authority on just everything. Whereas now it's as if they know, like, it's a long season, we're going to be okay, but you do have to hit some key markers along the way.
Yeah, I think the last year coming in, it was so focused on playing a certain way, and this year was more focused on building on that, mm-hmm. not necessarily holding the level, which is kind of where you want it to be, but that's just opened up kind of, not a can of worms, let's be honest, they're in a good, really good
but
spot.
It shouldn't back-to-back 6-plus goals against on home ice, and I get it, road trip, you come back, like a 3-gamer is not one I'm looking at like, oh, you're gonna have a dead spot when you come back.
It's
tough, and you know, after the game, like, a jersey went on the ice, I don't necessarily agree with that in this moment, but like, if you're a paying customer in back-to-back games, that's 6 goals, man.
Well, I mean, Ivan and East Van says, come on, Canucks fans, don't leave early, it's embarrassing and dumb. I think
you got to give them a reason to stay in the seats, though.
To your point, when you have 2 games in a row where it's six, you give up 6 goals, I can understand why fans are like, you know what, you're getting up.
It's only happened 13 times in franchise history before that. This is number 14 back-to-back games on home ice, 6-plus goals.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, I know people are very frustrated with the overall effort and what we saw. And one guy who struggled, and you know, we were talking about this on the pregame show about how JT. You know, obviously there's something hampering him, we all know, right? And offensively he's been productive for the team, but you can tell, like, he doesn't quite have the same jump and the same kind of pace to his game. And we kind of thought, okay, against McDavid tonight, because he'll be matched up the games against him a lot, he'll be forced to skate. It just looks like he's not quite there. He had a hard time getting to pucks and making plays, had a turnover as well, which led to, you know, I think it was the 3-0 goal where he throws the puck over and it goes over and Arvidsson scores. Just not the cleanest game for him. It just seems like something's not right there with JT either.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's tough. Obviously, Besser going down is tough for the entire team. But, you know, when he's that the other half of that pair there that they really like to keep together and then throw a winger on, I think it's tough to find your game that way. But I agree with you. I thought he was going to be have a little more jump today. Skinner, he's got them as much as any goals on Skinner as anybody else in the league. He's over a point a game versus Edmonton in his career. So he gets up for these games and that challenge. And he's that guy that wants to prove he belongs in that upper echelon with Drysdale and McDavid or whoever as a challenge. So I expected more. You're right. I don't like some of the turnovers, especially in blue lines from him. But he's the last guy on the team I'm worried about.
Yeah.
For sure. I think he's earned that.
Yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, he needs to be better probably in certain circumstances. But when, you know, when you need him, I think he's going to be there.
That cross-ice pass, though, is so maddening.
Oh.
Yeah. It's if it was like a different variety of turnovers, you're like, all right, he's trying some things. It has been a lot of that cross-ice pass pulling up. Yeah. And if you watch that play, it's not as if the lane was open to hit the guy on the far side. There's two Oilers in the way. And then, obviously, Draisaitl is the one that pressures it, the first guy. But yeah. There's two Oilers in the way. It's like, there's no way that pass is going through, but it's his default. Now, I don't know if Quinn put him in the best spot. He has to make that decision right away. But nevertheless, like that cross-ice pass from JT, that's been the thing that's been stood out so far through this early part of the season. Now, it's something historically he's done as well, but it's happening a lot.
Yeah,
right now.
I think it's kind of predictable a bit more probably for those forwards as well.
Yeah.
But it is an instance where Hughes is going through. It's a D-man giving you the puck. There's nobody behind
you.
Yeah. There's no safety net. The safety net dished the puck to you. So probably don't try that there. Granted, I don't necessarily like the rim around too. A lot of players to relieve that same pressure is the far rim to the winger. So JT's just trying to go the direct more route where you can probably create more off of it. But you're right. If there's two Oilers there, it can't go there.
It'd be one thing if he was entering the zone facing towards the end boards and had to turn to face Hughes, but he can see the whole ice.
Yeah.
And so certainly you can see the two guys across the ice, let alone Draisaitl coming towards you.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily always, you know, him receiving a pass on the entry. Sometimes it's him skating and trying to make that pass, which he's otherworldly talented, so he does complete that pass sometimes. But you'd hope there'd be some recognition of, hey, you know what, this isn't working all the time.
Yeah.
I might have to switch this up.
You need a certain level of audacity to do the things he does.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're on that line, and sometimes it's going to look bad, right? And sometimes it looks brilliant. So, that's, you know, it's kind of high-risk, high-reward moments that happen with JT Miller. Scott from Chilliwack and others are also very frustrated with the officiating tonight, texting in. And Scott says, the refs were the reason that Canucks collapsed, but when the game was close, the Canucks had momentum. There was no call on the Hughes trip, but McDavid gets the same call in the third period, though, the weak call on Hronek. It changed the momentum and, as usual, allowed the Oilers to rely on their power play to get them going. Very frustrating to watch. The refs impacted the game in that way. That is Scott and Chilliwack and countless other text messages saying the same thing. And I can understand. It was frustrating. We talked about it, too. I didn't love the icing, the non-icing call. I want to get your thoughts on that. Okay.
There's two of them.
So the one that leads to, it's the second goal, right?
Yeah.
Right, to make it 2-0. Yeah. Emberson has a beat on the puck. It does slow down a little bit. He slows down. It looks to me that Skinner comes out of the net a little bit, too, to kind of show that he's going to play the puck. As a former defenseman, should that have been icing or not?
Well, if I'm the defenseman going for back, yeah, I want the icing. But, no, the thing that...
Tell us how you really feel.
But the thing that made me angry with that one is... Who was the defenseman?
It was Emberson.
Emberson, I believe.
It was Hughes tipping the puck.
I haven't watched the highlight of it, but to me, in the moment, I believe he actually kind of leans back to take on the forecheck a bit coming in. So to me, there's like, okay, you've stopped your momentum forward completely because you're wanting to take this or guard it, and that's usually an auto call off. But I mean, that's hockey. Like, I know it's frustrating, and it happens, but the Canucks are still in this game at all those points, and their power play is incredible, or it should be, but this year it hasn't been. It's like 14% or whatever. So, you know, I agree with you, but at the same time, they're still in that game, and they still had opportunities.
The thing is, okay, so the two that really stand out are that icing. Yeah. You win the faceoff, so you can negate that, and it's just unlucky that goes off the stanchion and creates the goal.
Yeah.
And then, the Garland trip one, which to me, he was already fallen over, but nevertheless, that's one people are pointing to. You still got the clear.
Yeah, that one they got the clear.
Right? You still got the clear, and everything was settled thereafter. You can still win the play after that play where you're feeling aggrieved by, but the Hughes-McDavid one, that's the one where okay, if you're not going to call them, then that's got to be the standard. For it to immediately, on the flip side of the intermission be called.
Yeah.
That's where I have a discrepancy. But by and large, the icing, I didn't have a huge issue. Sat was a bit more fired up about it.
Yeah, in the moment, I didn't like it, and I saw the replay. I just wasn't a fan of the icing call. But it was bad luck to Brännström hits the
short
puck off.
Short stick.
Yeah.
Short stick that, you know, I just those ones. Yeah, you know, just get an alligator arm.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
You know what, Brett? Great stuff as always, man. We always love having you on the call, and good time chatting with you. Unfortunately, not a Canucks victory, but we'll be back with you again very, very soon.
Thank you, appreciate it, guys.
That is Brett Festerling calling the game tonight alongside Brendan Batchelor. A 7-3 loss by the Canucks on on home ice against the Oilers. It's Satir Shaw with Bick Nazar. Keep getting your thoughts into our text inbox, 650-650 Dunbar Lumber. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Let's take one phone call before we hit the break, and we'll get the head coach afterwards as well. And let's go to New York, where Bikram is on the line. Bikram, thanks for calling in, my friend. What are your thoughts here tonight after this tough Canucks loss?
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great, man. What do you have for us tonight?
All right. I think last time we spoke, I made a comment that the team hasn't been able to beat good teams. I know they beat LA a couple days ago, but it feels like they beat the bottom feeders. But when it comes to a good team, they're not able to stay in and play a competitive game. That might be because of the fact that JT's been a no-show. I think either he's injured or something's going on. But I think, Sad, you said this earlier, he's not performing well. And the last thing I definitely want to say is that the team does not look like last year. That maybe, you know, there's been times these new players on the team and all, and they're still integrating, but we're not seeing that consistency of playing good D and really putting those gaps in. And I think you might have mentioned this earlier as well, but the team just doesn't look like they have it together. And, you know, I know management might look at some things, but it is early, but, you know, things just don't look right. That's all for tonight, guys. Hope you have a good evening. I'm going to bed now.
Hey, good night. Thanks for calling in. That's Bikram from New York. And, you know, it is frustrating. I mean, they have beat the Panthers, but the Panthers missing a couple of guys. Mm-hmm. Canucks have missed guys as well. But, yeah, I understand. You know, you want to see how the Canucks
measure up in a big marquee game. Absolutely.
Yeah, and, I mean, people aren't just looking at the Canucks to make the playoffs. It's to make noise in the playoffs. You want to see how they stack up against the best, and they need to do better against the best. And Edmonton hasn't got off to a great start, but tonight they were far better, especially in the third period. But it's early in the season still to make any real declarations about what this team is. And we even talked about how, hey, you know, through the first 12 games, and as much as they won the last three games, you got to get through the first 20 to really know what they are. And it is disappointing, though, because they gradually got better on the road trip and lesser competition, of course, against San Jose and Anaheim. They were really clean against Anaheim and played their best game of the season overall against the LA Kings. And tonight, just kind of take a step back again. Is that just early season, you know, swings that you kind of work through and you're going to be fine over? Or is it an indication of you not having what it takes? Again, it's early to declare those things, but I can understand when you lose as badly as they have on home ice these last two games, it shakes your confidence as a fan. So I can understand some of the concern with some of these performances.
Yeah, the old phrase, if you're going to be crap on the road.
Yeah, not at home. And yeah. they have one win at home this
yep.
year.
One, two, and three on home ice. It's
yeah, four more at home. You got to turn it around here, right?
Five more.
Five. You're a six-game homestand.
It's a six-game homestand. So this has to get remedied real fast. And you know, we've chatted too. It's not just doing it. It's now doing it against good opponents. And you're not necessarily going to get a murderer's row here. It's Calgary coming up. Islanders thereafter. Chicago, Nashville. We know about their struggles. You know, the Rangers are really the next team that is a quote-unquote heavyweight, and that's not till the 19th. So you have four games till then to kind of build it back up for the next moment to use it as a measuring stick game.
Yeah, absolutely. Bernie from Kelowna says, the boys were tired tonight. That's pretty clear. Cut them some slack. Yeah, they had a three-game road trip, but they weren't playing even every other day. They had a couple of days break in between. They haven't had a back-to-back yet this year. I'm not sure fatigue can really be an excuse, but yeah, maybe not having your full energy.
They haven't played since Saturday.
Yeah, they played on
they haven't played since Thursday.
They haven't played back-to-backs, and they've had a lot of breaks in between games. So it's really been a pretty easy schedule for the Canucks so far this year, but obviously didn't have enough juice this evening. Keep getting your thoughts into our text inbox. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. It's Satir Shaw and Bick Nazar, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Like Kubota, do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. Canucks lose 7-3. More next. We'll hear from the head coach on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Bick Nazar. Have your say and join me on the People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets. Weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Huge.
quick pass left wing for Pettersson across the Oiler line. High slot with a shot that tipped off the stick of Ekholm and wide of the net. Janmark passes back to center for Connor Brown with speed into the left wing. Brown shoots, he scores! Lankinen got a piece of it off the glove, but it finds its way past him. And it's 7-2 Edmonton. Connor Brown has his second of the game.
Yeah, when it rains, it pours a bit here. I think Juleson actually might get a stick on this. As a D-man, it's a tough spot because you see that stick go back, almost cocked to shoot, and you want to get a stick on it, but a lot of times you end up just deflecting it slightly for the goaltender, makes it tougher on him. Edmonton has used their speed specifically down that left wall tonight. They've created a lot of havoc by going down with speed.
And Archer Shelovs is going to come into the game here as he's getting his equipment on behind the Vancouver bench.
Canucks go on to lose 7-3 on home ice against the Edmonton Oilers, and this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment, Satyar Shah and Bick Nizar. We are going to get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach when he gets to the podium as soon as he gets there. But keep getting your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We will take your phone calls as well after coach, 604-280-0650 or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And a lot of people are commenting, obviously, we talked about officiating earlier. We'll get to that. But here is the head coach at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown.
Second, and then a couple of miscues, execution, it's internet. And then after that, we lost, juice. And, I don't know if we looked really tired after that. McDavid started to go in the third, and we just couldn't match it.
You've had some success lately, but I think it's seven straight games now. You've given up the first goal. Are you seeing anything that's concerning in the starts to games?
Yeah, we just looked at some video. We're not getting to our game early enough. We got a couple of guys got to understand how we're going to play more predictable. I think we're taking the puck back too much. We survived it after the first, but we got to make sure that we stick to the game plan.
A couple holding penalties, a tripping penalty from the D. Is that just a symptom of chasing the game?
Yeah, I got to take a look. Maybe some gapping. You got gapping up. We actually, the road trip really gapped up well. I don't know if some guys looked a little tired tonight. Maybe that's why they weren't gapping. I don't know. I think when you hold or hooking and stuff, that means you're not gapping properly. Maybe our forwards aren't backtracking hard enough either.
Oilers didn't give you much space either. I mean, was that just the toughest opponent you've had this year?
Well, you can see they're a desperate team. They're big boys, they came to play. They're good at doubling up, too. And we just didn't get out of the double up situations quick enough.
Rick, talk to us about Kevin's performance tonight. Kevin Lankinen, it didn't seem like all seven goals were on him, but what did you think of him?
Well, he was a competitor. He hung in there. It was 3-2. He made a couple of, there was an empty net. Somehow he got a stick on it. So this guy's a fighter. He's the least of our problems.
Second period, would you wish it was maybe 2 minutes longer, 20
yeah.
minutes?
Yeah, our game came. We were on top of them. And then, like I said, the third, couple of mistakes. They got some time. They got some timely power plays. I got to give them credit. They when they got them, kind of knocked the sail, the wind out of us a little bit.
And Petey and Miller had to kill that penalty and got stuck out there for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Did that kind of screw up the rotation trying to get them back out?
Yeah, you're screwed. I brought him out there to win the draw, get him off. But yeah, that's a tough one.
For Pettersson with his individual game, are you seeing him coming along here, trending in the right direction?
Yeah, it's good to build on. Good for him.
And then going with 7D tonight, was there a late injury or with Baines or?
No, one of the D was he was fine just in case, and plus we needed that extra. I myself felt we needed it just for penalty killing. We just went with it.
Thank you.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown. From vision to reality, Tiletown has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. Not the longest availability from the head coach, of course, but, kind of mentioned he didn't like their game early on, and after giving up the first goal in seven straight games, have to start getting to their games a bit quicker. Mentioned after a couple of mistakes and things went against them in the third that they were a bit tired perhaps, and the penalties knocked the wind out of their sails. But he wasn't overly critical after the game here tonight, Bick.
No, and they're just coming off a three-game winning streak. So do you pick and choose your moments to you know, crack the whip a little bit. And the thing is like there were encouraging moments. It's just the bad moments extended for 6 minutes, and suddenly goals just kind of flooded in there. Because if you look at the 2-0 goal, 3 minutes and 30 seconds into the period, well, the 3-0 goal comes just 73 seconds later. And then McDavid scores at 7:16. Sorry, Connor Brown scores 6:10. Mm-hmm. McDavid scores 7:16. Kulak scores 8:08. Connor Brown scores 11:05. It piled on really fast. There were elements and encouraging stretches where it's like, okay, not a lot is happening here, and they can get back into the game, but just short sequences buried them.
Yeah, it really did. And those are the moments that really put them out of the game here tonight. A 7-3 loss against the Oilers on home ice. A lot of reaction on the text inbox, 650, 650. James and Qualic and Beach and Tyler both commenting that Elias Pettersson was a bright spot, looked more alive and better tonight. And Tyler says, I've been critical about Pettersson, but it was nice to see him have some offensive touches and fast decisions and looking confident. He had 2 points on the night, a goal and an assist. And the coach was asked about Pettersson and kept it short, said, yeah, his game is building, and good for him.
Yeah, he's not going to go out of his way to start praising individual performances in a game where you lost 7-3.
Exactly. And, hey, he picked up the assist on the power play goal to make it 7-3. It's kind of a meaningless goal anyways, but nonetheless, 2 points on the night. And a lot of people have been commenting on the text inbox about him looking better. And the same on the phone boards. Let's go to the phone board, 604-280-0650, your toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to Montreal, where we have Timothy on the line. Timothy, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts tonight?
Yeah, how are you doing?
We're doing great, man. How about you?
Good, thank you. Yeah, I watched the game tonight very closely, and I think there's still something wrong with Pettersson. I know Miller seems hurt, but I think they really miss Brock Besser. So what do you think about Pettersson? I don't think he really fits in with the Vancouver Canucks style of play. Sure, he scored a goal or a couple assists, but it all seems to come in the wrong time.
Yeah, thanks for the phone call, Timothy. I mean, he scored the goal to make it 3-1. That was a good goal. Mm-hmm. The last goal, you know, obviously 7-3 is meaningless. Yeah. The last point, but yeah, the goal did it kind of spark their comeback, right? They made it 3-2. Hronek's goal not scored not too long after, and Talk had mentioned how in the second their game came together. They played well. They were on top of them. They stayed above the puck well. They forechecked well. They had some chances. They got things going a little bit, but ultimately it wasn't, you know, a breathtaking performance, I'd say, overall. But as far as Pettersson, you know, fitting in with this team, I mean, we've seen him fit in with the team in the past. It hasn't worked recently. I would put that more to the individual as opposed to the team holding him back. Like, we know what he's capable of. He just hasn't done it consistently enough.
Yeah, and for the context of what this season is, they don't really have a style of play just yet. And we're waiting for what it develops into. And, you know, we get texts like this from Roman in Abbotsford. Do you guys think it's time for Talking to just say, forget the rush chance idea, and this team goes back to their identity from last year? Defense first, staples, 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 and the offense will come. Love the show. Keep up the great work. Thank you for the compliment there. Thing is, I would say, okay, deviate from the rush stuff. If we saw the rush stuff, it feels like they've trended back to who they were last year based on what the three games we just saw in California. We're not seeing overwhelming, like, guys blowing the zone, trying to be proactive and aggressive. Yeah. When creating rush chances, it hasn't really been there. So if they're still in this transition of, hey, what are we this season, it hasn't really materialized. And it's a leap to a conclusion about Pettersson not fitting in on style of play in general, but I don't think they have a style of play, and that to me is the bigger issue.
Yeah, but I think we saw elements. We saw it last game, right? Like they kind of played the identity we saw last year. I think that's something that they can get back to and do. It's just so early in the year yet we haven't forged it fully, and that's kind of part of the process as you go through early in the season. It's just such a disappointing loss, the way they lost yet again here tonight, 7-3, especially coming off the heels of that 6-0 loss on home ice against the Devils before this 3-game road trip. And as far as Besser not being here, yeah, obviously not having him was a big loss for the team. And Justin sent this message saying, I'm at the game tonight. He said, my input from the drive home, this team makeup and characteristics are completely different without Besser and Joshua. It feels like going from a V8 to a V6, not having those guys in the lineup. So, yeah, we'll see when Joshua can come back and what the status for Besser is, who Patrick Alvin talked about today, meeting with the media after the Canucks skate, and said no real update. He's still under evaluation. And Talk had mentioned how, you know, he doesn't look great, but doesn't look awful when he saw him today. So we'll see where things are at, and hopefully it's not a long absence for Brock Besser. We'll go to the phone boards coming up in a moment again, Bick, but what's happening on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650?
I'll read this one from Lucas in North Delta, who's using a word that a lot of people are texting in, but I'll single this one out. Hey, guys, I was at the game tonight. Canucks had fight with the two goals until the third. They lost their discipline in taking penalties. Now, always bite them hard when playing a team like Edmonton and the stacked McJesus power play crew. They need to focus on their structure and get back to their roots with the system talk it's had instilled in them last year. That's Lucas from North Delta, and a lot of people messaging about structure. That is the buzzword in the inbox today. And even Rick Tocchet just alluding to something like, you know, the guys aren't getting to their game early enough and need to play more predictable and sticking to a game plan.
Yeah.
You know, we referenced a little bit in the early going of the season, you know, buy-in, and there's no reason to not buy in based on the success of last year. But some of that is adhering to, you know, the coach's game plan that they have in the beginning of these games, because now it's seven games in a row where they've given up the first goal.
Yeah, and that's something that just can't continue. Seven straight games, you can't be playing from behind all the time, right? Like, it really puts you at a disadvantage. But Capitalist texts in and says, early in the season, but their home record is pathetic. He wishes that somebody would have asked about the home record as well. And we've had a lot of people texting in about that. And you put the photo out, and Lena tweeted out a video of a jersey on the ice at the end of the game. You can check it out on their X accounts. But we saw the fans leave the building essentially early. Oilers fans are here. They were chanting "Let's go Oilers" very loudly in the barn.
So they saw the opportunity,
so,
and they ran with
it. There's been a lot of criticism and talk about the crowd and the reaction. And to your point, when people do come to a game on a Saturday night, they're excited, you know, they come to spend money, and if, you know, you have a couple of games in a row you've gone and it's been really bad losses, like it's tough to take. So I understand the fans' frustration, and we're here and weren't happy with what they saw here tonight. Generally speaking, the home crowd's been fantastic over the past couple years.
Yeah.
Since the pandemic, we've talked about how great the crowd's been, and we all know what it was like last year and even the past couple years before that, really, as the team started building and getting to the point where it's at. But, you know, you also have to give fans a reason to stay engaged and happy, and that was really tough when they got into the third and the game blew right wide open.
Yeah, it's back-to-back games, 6-plus goals. It's huge. You're not in these games, and it's not like it's late game heroics by the opposition and you lose a tough one. You know, some of these games you're out fairly early, and the chance of hope is gone. And this is also with 3-goal leads in the first game of the season, and
yeah,
you lose that one.
Yeah.
So if you think of the,
it's been tough losses,
depth of quality here, it hasn't really been there.
I get
on
it.
Home ice. Like, what's the marquee one? The one against Pittsburgh?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
It's the one game, right? And it's Pittsburgh. And I get it. So I understand. I understand the fans' frustration is justified.
And the Carolina game wasn't really – it was Kachetkov doing some weird things to give the Canucks an opportunity to get back into that game. But that wasn't a good performance. So it's been 3 bad ones here on home ice. So I get the fans leaving. I don't necessarily agree with the fan that threw the jersey on the ice, but it's your money. It's your jersey. You know, the moment when it happened a few years ago, that felt the right moment to do it.
Well, yeah, it was –
But I totally sympathize with the frustrations of fans that have been showing up here. Says, hey, this is 3 in a row. It's not really that great.
No, I agree. Like, I agree. I mean, Lena said it. It's a bit much. It's a bit much early in the season, but I totally agree. New West Nick says, if you want to shut up Oilers fans, play better and win. Simple. I mean, not wrong. Facts only. All right. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. Let's go back to the phone boards. Let's go to Maple Ridge, where we have Bork on the line. Bork, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Oh, hey, guys, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Oh, okay, listen here. This game tonight was an absolute disappointment. I came down here to Vancouver. I wasn't at the game. I was at the Score on Davie. And my God, guys, it was an absolute disappointment. Have you ever had those Remix sodas?
Yes.
Those remix sodas were as bad as the Vancouver Canucks tonight. They were absolutely disgusting to watch on the ice, just like those. I've been watching this team since I've been a little boy, all right? That is one of the worst. I don't know how we've got 7 wins. They on the ice tonight, they were terrible.
Yeah, it was tough. It was a tough game. Hey, thanks for the phone call, Bork. Appreciate it. Very passionate and fired up. So one of the worst games he's seen. And I get it. Like it was a frustrating game. Like I understand. Fired up phone call though.
Yeah, what was the moment that you could kind of hang on to? It was, you know, once Rona got that goal, you think, all right, there's a chance to do this. And a second intermission, we were chatting, and it's like, yeah, you were back within a shot, and you know, some frustrations about the Hughes call or non call at the end of that second period, but. Yeah, they didn't rise to the occasion.
Yeah.
And it's like the 7-3 is just tough.
It's tough. Well, I mean, you know, we talked about it a little bit with Brett, but I really didn't like how they defended the front of their net. Now, a couple of bounces, too, but on the like how Lankinen made the desperation save on the PK. Pedersen stopped a sure goal from Connor McDavid on a wide open net. That could have been 2 more goals. And there's so many other chances. The first goal gets scored off a bit of a scramble, right? So 4 of the goals that get scored were right in front of your own net. And the Canucks get outmanned or outmuscled or just outbattled, you know? And I think that's part of the issue, too, tonight. And is that fatigue? You know, I know Bernie was mentioning that, too. The coach brought that up a couple times nonetheless. But I know that certain things you kind of have to fight through. But that's where the game was won and lost tonight. It's the trenches, so to speak, and that area Edmonton was dominant in.
And it's not as if it's diving plays, right? Yeah, there's some scrambles there, but Draisaitl's all alone. He's able to convert that one in. McDavid, you know, comes through clean and smacks that goal in. Yeah, you bring up the goals here tonight from Edmonton, and it's just they're all within just millimeters of the goal line here. McDavid scores at the top of the crease. Draisaitl scores right next to the crease. Connor Brown scores right next to the crease. Corey Perry obviously gets that tap in. And then there's 2 from the dots there from Brown and Kulak. And then the Arvidsson up one up high. But, you know, 4 of their goals. Sorry, 5 of their goals tonight. 4 or 5. 4 goals. Net front, basically.
Yeah, and that's you know, the game was won and lost there. Canucks had 3 goals. 4 of those goals were scored right there in the middle. And, you know, they were able to stop a couple, like we mentioned, but just not good enough. And one guy who's been getting a lot of criticism on the text inbox, and a lot of it to go around here tonight, was Vincent Desharnais. And the coach mentioned, he kind of stopped himself from saying one of the guys was battling something. Did you not kind of think that when he was talking about dressing 7 defensemen? He kind of stopped to say that one of the guys, he kind of stopped himself and said, well, no, we wanted to have 8-7 defensemen. We wanted it for the PK. He didn't delve into it. But it sounded like he kind of caught himself before getting too deep into the reasons why he dressed up at 7 defensemen. But Noel Juulsen had a couple tough moments. You know, and Vinny Desharnais had a couple tough moments.
Juulsen plays 7-19 as a -3.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's tough. And look, when you're not playing regular games here, and you get thrust into this spot here against the Edmonton Oilers, it's going to be some pressure on you in this spot. Noah Juulsen last played, 9-10 days ago against Jersey. He gets this opportunity to come back in the lineup in just 7 minutes. There's the icing. Again, even if we can debate if it was an icing or not, it's still just launching the puck down the ice, and it does lead to an opportunity for it to be icing. So that's not great. But, yeah, -3, and he had the goal. Was it Kulak's goal? Where his exit pass, he tries the rink-wide pass, and it gets knocked back at the offensive blue line, straight to Connor McDavid, who is the cross-ice trailer in Kulak, and there's your 6th goal in that spot. There were some tough moments from Juulsen tonight.
Yeah, it's tough for those guys at the back end, and it really cost them in a big way, especially on the scoreboard as well here tonight, a 7-3 loss. Ian says, for all the people being critical, anyone notice the Canucks are on track to finish with 107 points still? I mean, you know, fair enough. And this one here, from Pardeep says, was Bork a jokes per 60 personified the call? And Pet Capitalist says, this caller, wow, on Bork. So Bork getting some reaction on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll free, 1-888-275-0650. This text message unsigned commenting on the jersey on the ice. The jersey, it says, the jersey on the ice is an Alberta PSYOP.
That's they
strong.
Ripped the jersey off.
I like it. That's a jokes for 60. I like it. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We are going to get to the thoughts of the Canucks. We'll get to the thoughts of Canucks players as the show goes on here as well on the post-game show. Now, the other thing too, Bick, that the coach mentioned, and somebody was asking us here on the text inbox about next game, who gets a start in goal. He says, I think it should be Lankinen. What are your thoughts? The head coach shut down any notion that Lankinen was to blame for any of the goals tonight. It wasn't his cleanest game because once it got, you know, there was one that went through his a couple ones he probably wants to have back. Then went in, made some great saves. He talked about the saves he made on the PK to keep him in, called him a fighter, called him a warrior. I would imagine he goes back to Lankinen on Tuesday.
Oh, man. But then that's like another five starts in a row.
Well, you know, he got some work in today, she loves. It's all right.
He did something. He did something.
He got into a game.
Oh, man. It's just huge gaps. And I get it. He gets a little bit of run here, but
I mean, they have back-to-backs coming up on the weekend.
So he's definitely going to play one of Chicago, Nashville.
Yeah. Probably Chicago, I would guess.
And I get it, divisional opponent. Do you want to go back to Lankinen?
And probably, or Lankinen gets the Preds.
Or Shelovs gets the Islanders and the Preds, or the Islanders and Chicago.
Honestly, I don't know if Shelovs gets in until the weekend. To be honest, because if Lankinen comes in and wins against the Flames, he probably gets the Islanders too, and then you know Shelovs getting one of the games on the weekend.
Me personally, and it's not necessarily based on merit, just as far as like way to split the usage here, I might go Shelovs on Tuesday against Calgary.
Yeah.
He also played him at the start of the year. Now, look, maybe they have his number and they're very aware, but I just – you wait too long to freeze this guy out, it's just going to get tougher and tougher for him.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with that necessarily, but at the same time, you know, I think Lankinen so far has like been the better goalie by far, you know, and this game against the Calgary Flames.
But at some point you have to provide the opportunity for him to get back into it.
Yeah. No, fair enough. I still would go with Lankinen on Tuesday. Like I'm just at the point where with Shelovs, until Demko comes back, I just ride Lankinen, and whenever that happens, let Shelovs get back to the AHL and work on his game. I understand what you mean, but I don't know if the priority should be for him to get to his game right now, especially when Lankin has played so well and you have Demko hopefully making a return sometime this month, hopefully by the end of the month, and we'll see ultimately how that goes. There's some more updates on what the Canucks have been up to. They made a trade, of course, moving Daniel Sprong to Seattle Kraken. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about some other things potentially available for them on the defensive side of things, and the health of some Canucks players, not only Besser and Dakota Joshua, but also a couple of prospects that they're keeping an eye on and want to bring up to play games for the Canucks. We'll get to that. More of your thoughts on the text inbox, 650-650, and also on the phone board, 604-280-0650, or toll free 1-888-275-0650. This is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio
and Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650
and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Edmonton's headed to the power play with Filip Hronek in the box for a holding call. A suspect holding call, I'll say, and the Oilers win the draw. Bouchard top of the point. Left circle for Nugent Hopkins. Passes down low to Hyman, trying to backhand chance. Rebound, they score. It's McDavid at the side of the net. The Oilers have been great on the power play all night. This is their first official goal on the man advantage, and it's 5-2 Edmonton.
Yeah, and the pressure is mounting. They didn't have one before that tonight, but they scored one a second after for the first goal of the game, and Lankinen made the best stop of maybe the year on the second. This one they're able to convert. It's just down to Hyman. He's working in front, and McDavid pops up.
Our game came. We were on top of them. And then, like I said, the third couple of mistakes, you know, they got some time. They got some timely power plays. I got to give them credit. They got they when they got them, kind of knocked the sail, you know, the wind out of us a little bit.
Canucks lose 7-3 on home ice against the Edmonton Oilers. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. It's Satyar Shah and Bick Nizar here coming to you live from the Jim Robson broadcast gondola as we were arguing over how to do laundry on the postgame show between breaks.
If you want to know what happens in the breaks, we're arguing about laundry.
Yeah. Right? You know you're getting old when.
Or you know it was a bad game.
You know, yeah, that's another reason. But, yeah, keep getting your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We'll get to your phone calls in just a moment. And we do have a lot of reaction on the text inbox, too, about Elias Pettersson. This one here says, can't believe you already got a PD complaint call. Arguably the Canucks' best forward playing here tonight.
I'm not even sure if it's arguably.
He was. I mean, by far.
Who's the second one in contention?
I mean, it's tough. Like, even that vaunted third line was an overly effective start to finish here tonight.
Yeah, they had a couple of tough moments, but...
Like, yeah, is it Hoglander, maybe? Like, Hoglander was good. Pettersson, Hoglander connects the two best forwards tonight.
No, I think it's easily Pettersson.
Yeah, I mean, who else? I'd say Hoglander. I thought Bluger was pretty good. He had some good moments.
I mean, I'll just...
But that's it.
Obligatory, just give it to Connor Garland.
Yeah, and even on the back end, you know, Hronek, I thought, had overall a solid game, but Quinn wasn't at his normal best. You know, on defensively, mm-hmm. he had a turnover along the boards, which led to the, you know, 4-2 goal, and a couple of moments, you know, he wasn't quite as sharp as he normally is. It was a game where none of the Canucks players were really at their absolute best, but Pettersson is a player on the text inbox because he's been, you know, the man in focus, is getting some praise here tonight.
Yeah, fair play to Canucks fans who have been hard but fair throughout their tenure here. And, you know, even in wins this season when they felt Pettersson wasn't performing, we would get calls about it. And in a loss today, fans pumped up about the Elias Pettersson performance. 650. Plenty of good thoughts here. I'm just trying to bring up this one here. All right.
There are too many to choose from.
Yeah, no, really, there are. This one, good evening, guys. Great show. I hate saying this, but this one might be on the coach. Why change the lineup so dramatically after the team was getting a roll, especially with DeBrusque and Petey scoring again? Seven defense with one forward short. So I picked the wrong one here. I just glanced at Pettersson here. This one's from Cheers from Campbell River, 650.
All right, this one from Saeed in North Van. Simply, Canucks are not good enough right now. One step forward and two steps back. And especially after that successful road trip, going back and losing this one. But you have a few other ones here.
Ian, Petey, this is the upside of tonight's game. Was integral on multiple scoring plays.
Yeah, no, solid, you know, great game. I mean, great game. He was one of the better games. I don't think it's peak Pettersson yet, I think. But he had a couple shifts in the first period, even before he scored, mm-hmm. where he looked like he was the most engaged player on the line, really directing things and being a prominent figure on the line again. And he just seemed more assertive, which is good to see, and needs to carry that over more.
That's what Sadiq from Phoenix is saying as well. Not the Canucks' best game, but it looked like Pettersson's best game. 2 points, two shots, minus one. One hit, 19-10 of ice time. Which is a lot for him this season. Looked engaged and more confident with the puck. What do you guys think about Pettersson trending in the right direction? The thing is, it just stack games. That's it. You got to be able to stack games. While a lot of encouraging signs here recently, obviously, but as far as getting the fans in your favor, like, it feels like it's going to have to be 10, 12, 15, 20 games before you see it. And that's a hard thing to do, but... Look, you got Quinn Hughes doing it for 12 games here, and a night like tonight, which can go wrong, you kind of get a pass on it. Lankinen, even, like, you play strong, a couple of goals go through you, but it's like, yeah, okay, like, he's been good enough.
Like, even, I know JT tonight we spoke about, like, not his best game. Defensively, he wasn't on top of it. We talked about the turnover, but he's also played well enough that he's not under the microscope quite, you know, and now if he obviously can't get out of this little struggle, then that will turn. We know how that can happen when a player struggles go over in any extended period of time. But, yeah, for Pettersson, it was certainly better. We'll get to more of your texts coming up in a moment, but let's go to the phone boards, and let's go to Tawasin, where we have Jesse on the line. Jesse, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Guys, thanks for having me. Canucks Hot Takes on Instagram. If you told us that we would have a 7-3-3 record after 13 games going into the season, we'd be pretty happy about that. Oilers are 7-7-1, not looking so great. biggest things want input on is, one, I think the Sprong trade comes at an odd time. I don't think he had enough chance to really get in the lineup and do some great things. Tockett gave him the Kuzmenko treatment a little bit. If you don't back check and play defense, but was it a wrong time to trade Sprong? Love input on that, as well as in this game, do you play Bane since you called him up, run four forward lines instead of having seven D-man? Love to hear the thoughts on that, boys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for the phone call. I appreciate the thoughts. Where are you on the first thing he was asking about?
With Daniel Sprong, the thing is, I would have liked to see one more honest attempt to go back with Elias Pettersson. But at the same time, you know, you think about it, that there was going to be a necessary step from Sprong to embrace Rick Tockett's style of play. And it certainly didn't happen at the start of the season, which is why he was scratched. And then I just wonder, you know, with Besser out last game, he didn't get a bump up in ice time. And you just kind of look and it's like, man, it's a long road back to say, I got to do all these things. And as much as we say, like, showcase who you are, you do have to buy into what the coach is doing at the same time. So
yeah.
I don't necessarily know if it's the wrong time.
Listen,
it kind of feels like both sides were waiting for the other to meet them at halfway, and neither side did.
And he's not a player that's on anything more than a one-year deal, and it's a minor one-year deal under $1 million. So there's no commitment beyond this year or investment here. So if that buy-in, for any reason, isn't fully in and prepared to go through 20, 30, 40 games. And Reach made the point, like, Hoglander went through 40 games last year before the coach could trust him to play a bigger role. If it's something like that, are you prepared to go through that? And if you're not, he's a guy that also is at an interesting point in his career. He can't just sit around and be a bit player somewhere. And I think when he signed here, I think there was at least some level of understanding of, if things aren't going the way we want, we will help you go somewhere else. That's why they traded him for nothing to Seattle and started putting him on waivers. They ushered him somewhere, which is not beneficial to Vancouver. It's a division rival, you know, and you're not getting anything for him, but you're doing him a solid. So was there a trade demand? I'm not necessarily sure. I don't think so necessarily. Mm-hmm. But were there some level of discussions over the past few days with the head coach about his role and what it's going to take for him to get above? And when it became pretty clear that you're not getting the Besser spot, and if he's not fully in, was it just the time to do it now as opposed to do it later? I do think something came to a head. Like, I don't think it was just like, oh, sure, it's not working 9 games in, you pulled the plug. Like, it's only 9 games. I mean, 12 games in, but only 9 games that he played. So I don't know if it was that. Something may have came to a head. I don't think it's major, obviously. Like, there's nothing acrimonious here. But as far as the question in terms of interesting timing, you know, that would be my take on it. Because you obviously, like, if he was happy, are you against having him there being playing 10 minutes on the fourth line? Are you against that?
No, not at all. And someone who's obviously got a skill set, it's just like we see, if you want to play top six, you have to play a certain way. And, and the caller references Kuzmenko, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, you can be a functional player and have a skill set, but there's going to be a demand on you to play a certain way in the top six.
Yeah.
And that's the element that, you know, I wish Sprong would have had that immediately out of the get-go. And I do think it improved, but even when Baines got a shot in the top six, and some people said, hey, this is a spot too big for Baines because he's not producing, which is fair point, but he was, you know, pulling pucks off walls. He was getting in on the forecheck, even though he wasn't producing. If that sort of stuff wasn't happening enough for Rick Tockett in the eyes of Daniel Sprong, like, to me, if I was in Sprong's shoes, that's the stuff you got to get right first. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's an indictment. Baines getting that shot was an indictment on Hoglander and Sprong specifically, that you guys aren't doing the things that we need, that I'd rather have Baines in the spot than you guys. I think that's what that was about more. And the other part of the question too, or one of the parts of the question at the end that we'll hit, isn't it better to have four full lines as opposed to having, you know, seven defensemen? I generally agree. I don't like having 7D. As the coach mentioned, he stopped himself short of giving a reason as to a player's situation for the game, whether it's health, you know, injury, or maybe not feeling 100%. But he didn't go into that and mentioned he just wanted it for PKing, which I don't buy. I think there was probably a reason why he wanted to have an extra defenseman. I don't really like it. I'd rather have
the PK wasn't. I get it's the Oilers, but I don't know if the PK was unreal tonight?
No, it wasn't really good. I'm not sure if that – exactly. So, PK wasn't – we should talk about net front. I mean,
yeah.
You know,
Drysdale. It's having it's the seven technically defense, even strength on the Drysdale goal, but the guy's not even back into the play just yet.
Yeah, I mean, Drew and Port Moody and James and Qualicum Beach are asking thoughts on Desharnais. They don't like how he's played so far. He seems lost in front of his own net at times. So – kind of similar to Sprong, but a bigger investment because it's $4 million over 2 years, $2 million per season. Desharnais coming into them, and he spoke about this, and I know if you've listened, you've heard me say this, but Desharnais told us at training camp that he came here with the idea of getting better over the course of the year and really investing in this coaching staff that believe in him. And he cited Myers, who went from being, you know, a third pair defenseman at the start of last year to playing a prominent top four role by the end of the season, and how his game grew and evolved. So that's kind of the mentality that Desharnais came into this organization with. I completely agree with Drew. I agree with James at Qualicum Beach, and we've spoken about this before. He wasn't a player on either one of our lists that was very high as far as targets. And, you know, if it was up to us, probably we wouldn't pull the trigger on adding Desharnais. But you have to give it time because it was with the idea of making this player better over the course of some time. But it's still $2 million per year. It's still a two-year investment. And so far, it hasn't really given you the dividends you're hoping for.
Yeah, and you're willing to take chances on premium positions or scarce positions at the very least. Right-handed D, they're just real tough to find.
Yeah, so you kind of have to have some projects along the way. Like you saw Juulsen, for instance, and the other part is so far is even Juulsen's game hasn't quite been there compared to last year.
If you want some internal competition and make guys fight for roles, you need two people succeeding in a role, at least one person succeeding in the role. And right now, both guys haven't really had moments. Again, it's nine games now for Vincent Desharnais. The thing I would like to see is, like, encouraging signs along the way, even if it was a one step forward, two steps backward kind of thing. But, through nine games, I think there's been, like, one decent game here. Not that the other eight have been bad. It's just we really haven't seen enough of what the upside might be. You can see the mobility, you can see the size, but size without functionality isn't really that important.
He's had a couple of moments, but it was against lesser competition. He looked good on the road trip, I thought, against the Ducks and against even the Kings. He had some good moments with Brännström. But he gets put under pressure, under real duress, and has to really, think quickly. That's where he's been in a little bit of trouble, right? And that has to change if he's going to really work out for the Canucks in a third-pair role playing the right side. All right, we'll get back to some of your text messages in a moment, but let's go to the phone boards, 604-280-0650. Let's go to Coquitlam, where we have Gord on the line. Gord, thanks for calling in, pal. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, guys, just wondering, having seven defensemen, do you think that screws up their mentality in terms of their rotation and how they get into the game? Like, wouldn't it have been better if they were short of forward to take a D and just put them on the wing on the fourth line or something like that instead?
It's a fair question. Thanks for the phone call, Gord.
The thing is, the fourth line didn't feel like they really missed a beat.
Well, because they kept rotating, a higher-end right winger throughout each shift.
Whoever it was, I think even Pettersson got a small run there.
Pettersson, Sherwood, Garland, who played, and DeBrusk, all those guys got regular, they all kind of rotated through regularly on that fourth line.
The cameo appearances, and look, not that the fourth line had a banner night by any means, but they were on the ice prior to the Hronek goal, which, their work in the offensive zone helped eventually create the opportunity. But as far as the D rotations, again, Noah Juulsen played 7:19 tonight. Not exactly a lot of minutes, and it was a -3 in those minutes with a hit in there. So it's not as if he was, taking minutes away from anything. It's 7 minutes from him. They just weren't clean.
No, they weren't. I mean, they really weren't. And, whether that's fatigue or not, I'm not quite sure. Hussein texts in and says, talk is cheap. You can't see any sort of progression in Vinny's game. The experiment should be over, and they are in desperate need of a top four D-man. Have to find this year's Zadorov. That's Hussein from Coquitlam texting in. I think the quest to find a defenseman is there. We've documented how the Canucks are looking at that. I mean, I even mentioned at the end of training camp, don't be surprised that if you start hearing the Canucks are sniffing around defensemen even at the early part of the season, and then obviously the Brännström trade happened, and then later on, you know, we've heard reports of them calling teams to kind of assess the situation on defensemen around the league. Frank Cervelli has told us that as well over the past couple of weeks on Canucks Central. So we know they're active and checking in. But nothing has really come together quite yet. Part of it is they probably want to keep building cap space as the season goes on, because they have that capability this year with having some space heading into the season. And as we get closer to deadline, that money grows. And at this pace, Bick, we could be talking about anywhere from 6 to 8, 9 million if they play their cards right and guys start getting healthy. So they could be in a nice position by the deadline. So timing is big this year. Last year, they were in LTIR, and they had a chance to get Zadorov, but they didn't have the same situation, right? So I think that's why it might take a bit longer this year for that trade to happen, as opposed to last year when they got Zadorov in November, for instance.
Keep accruing.
Exactly. So I think on the trade market, we might have to wait on that. On Vinny,
for the person that threw the jersey on the ice, so you can buy an accrual.
Oh, accrual jersey. Yeah, you can do
nameplate.
By the way, that jersey, do you think they didn't like the Fanatics jersey, maybe? I don't know. Maybe it's somebody who didn't like Fanatics. Maybe it's nothing to do with the Canucks after.
They're being a fanatic by not liking the Fanatics.
Yeah, who knows? You know, that's nice. You know, that kind of comes together well. But, you know, and all kidding aside, people even ask about, you know, Vinny Deharnay. Can the Canucks move him? Listen, he still has, you know, what, $3.75 million owed to him? You know, another $1.7 million this year and then $2 million next year. It's not insignificant money. We know that moving guys who are not playing well, that are making even $3 to $4 million over the course of a couple of years, it costs you money to move off that. You saw Tucker Pullman, for instance, on LTIR and all that. The Canucks had to retain salary and give up a pick. Now, they got Brännström out of it as well, but, you know, you have to pay something to get off that. So we'll see with Deharnay. I don't think the time is now. Maybe a bit later as we get closer to the trade deadline. But this organization, though, Bick, is not afraid of admitting mistakes, so to speak. We saw them do it with Daniel Sprong. Mm-hmm. Curtis Lazar, a couple years ago, signed a 3-year deal. They traded him at the trade deadline his first year into the contract. We saw even with Kuzmenko, right? They signed him to an extension, and, you know, 1 year in, they made the trade for Lindholm. So they're not afraid of admitting mistakes. It's just about timeline. When you're asking about guys like Deharnay or asking about making bigger additions, we may just have to wait a bit longer this year.
Yeah, and there's a couple of people texting in about Dante Fabro as well, who's on waivers. You mentioned the cap space accrual and all that sort of stuff. Do you want to burn that up right away
Fabro? If you pick up Fabro, Bick, you're not going to be able to make a significant addition by the deadline unless two things happen. You trade somebody significant off the roster, or you have significant injuries and are into LTIR.
And to your point, And to the caller's point of top four D-man, and look, there's elements of Dante Fabro's game that I really like, and I don't know if they pair well with the way Nashville's played these last 2 years, so I do think there's a better opportunity maybe for him elsewhere in the NHL. But is that the card you're willing to play right now and saying, down the road, we want to go make a high-end acquisition? If they're in the playoff picture, which every reason to believe that they will be,
yeah.
Do you play your big card and now you go get a $6+ million D-man because they'll have the cap space for it?
See, I think that Fabro could be an improvement on what the Canucks put out on the third pair. Mm-hmm. I don't think that improvement is worth sacrificing your flexibility for. And like Elliot Friedman mentioned this, and, you know, we were saying this before the show as well, it's unlikely anybody claims Dante Fabro right now because of how much money is owed to him. But once he clears and can be sent down to the minors, it becomes easier to trade because the team doesn't have to take him on right away. They can put him into the minors, takes more money off the cap, and you can make a trade where you move a contract off the books potentially to acquire him. And somebody's asking about that. If he clears, can the Canucks make a trade for Fabro? Now, if the situation was such that they would retain salary on him, then sure. Right? Like, if you can get him at 1.25 or something, okay, I have nothing against that. You know, that maintains flexibility for you. But, you know, I just don't think you can do the full salary. So once he clears, maybe somebody works a trade out, but I don't think he's getting claimed by tomorrow.
650 into the Dunmar Lumber text message inbox. This one, Andrew and Langley, never good to lose and fold like the way they did today, but a good kick in the butt loss is humbling to this team to ensure they continue to work hard. Feels like they're relying on skill, not exactly winning battles and playing smart. Growth, it comes from adversity with no Besser, no Demko, bad defense, and offensive stars are sleeping. Hopefully this team won't repeat the same issues. Ray and Coquillum, who's finding a silver lining. Oilers get shellacked by the Canucks early last year. They go to the Cup Finals. Canucks get shellacked by the Oilers early this year. Canucks going to the Cup Finals? That's Ray and Coquillum. Yeah. From the land of good takes.
From the land of good takes. Capitalist asks us, have you guys heard from Mike in Surrey lately? Yeah, I mean, we've read his text. He hasn't called in yet, but he's texted
frequent
in.
Frequent elite texter.
Yeah, we interact with Mike all the time, and I know there's been obviously some passionate debates over the years, but we've always, you know, appreciated his passion and him texting in. And
look at Canucks fans caring for each other. Yeah, hey, we haven't heard from Mike. Is Mike still around?
And yeah, he mentions how the Canucks have given up 7 goals in 7 straight games, thinks his team is mid right now, and thinks that outside of Hughes, this defense can't really generate anything. So he has some concerns about the Canucks defense, and doesn't like how they played so far. Yeah, I know you texted in earlier. For those wondering, texted in earlier too, said the Canucks need to go out and get a D-man because it's wide open in the league this year, and if you go out and improve your team, you have a chance. So that's summing up for those wondering what Mike has to say.
Couple more from the inbox?
Let's do one more before we get to the phone boards again.
Okay, this one. I never, ever leave early. I did tonight. So many horrific losses at home this year. I'm not ready to throw my jersey, but I am not against letting the team hear it. It's never a fun car ride home.
Yeah, no.
But hopefully it's been fun. You've been tuning in to the post.
Yeah, we're trying to make it fun for you.
We're here for you.
We're making the best out of a bad situation is kind of the way we view
another perspective from the fans that we're here tonight.
All right, let's go back to the phone boards. Let's go to Lions Bay where we have Jose on the line. Jose, good hearing from you, buddy. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, Sat. Hey, Bick. First of all, just a message to the fan who threw their jersey onto the ice after this. Guys, please get a grip. Come on. Like the Canucks overall are having a decent season thus far. It's not time to panic. It's a little bit of an overreaction. You know, guys, I'm calling it for a few things. Number one, clearly the defense is not as solid as it was last year. I am interested in the concept of Dante Fabro if he clears waivers, and even the question if the Canucks could somehow unload Desharnais or even trade him to Nashville at 1.75. I believe Fabro makes 2.5. Now you have an actual difference of $800,000. You know, local boy, first overall draft pick, good wheels, right shot defenseman. Just thinking out loud of how they could possibly improve the defense. Now, my other comment, though, is really about coaching. This is one alarming thing that kind of bothered me about Vancouver, and I kind of see it happening right now. And that's a lot of experience that has left the Canucks organization, or in Ian Clark's case, kind of being banished as an NHL scout. Like in the last couple of years, we've seen Jason King leave coaching the power play. We saw Mike Yeo leave after the past season. We've seen Jeremy Colleton leave out of Abbotsford. They've been replaced by Yogi Shirokovsky, who really is very, very new. I love Matty Malholtra, but he's never been an AHL head coach. You know, Marcus Turania, same deal, first time coaching NHL goalies, right, as an NHL goalie coach. And I take a look at even the power play. Ottawa, New Jersey, and Minnesota have Jason King, Mike Yeo, and Jeremy Colton all coaching their power plays. And guess what? Their power play percentages are all higher than the Vancouver Canucks. And I know the power play is looking a little bit better these days, but to me, it's coming down to a coaching staff that is a little bit more green, and I don't feel comfortable. Guys, back to you.
Thanks for the phone call, Jose. We are going to have to hit the break here, so wait
some
more on the other side.
Hitting the post there,
great,
as well.
Great timing on it as well. But hey, on the coaching stuff, time will tell, right? It's a fair question, and when results don't get to the level you want, you look at those things and you wonder if there's a real correlation or causation there. We'll talk about that, and also the other part of the question about the defense on the other side, plus more phone calls and Ian McIntyre on the Canucks on the Post Game Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd.
And Thomas Drantz.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app. This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show
on the official home of the Canucks,
Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks dump it into the Edmonton end. DeBrusk holds in right point with the help of Myers. Played it down the near boards. Ekholm back to it. Clear to the line. Not out. DeBrusk with a shot. Tip. They score. Elias Pettersson. Good response from the Canucks as the Oilers couldn't clear the zone. Pettersson drives the front of the net and tips home the DeBrusk shot to make it 3-1.
There's just pressure. You can tell the Canucks want to answer here. Myers down the wall, keeps a puck in. DeBrusk, nice little draw pass. It comes back out. Actually, Edmonton trying to clear it. DeBrusk just gets it to the net quick. Petey's drive-by, nice tip.
For Pettersson with his individual game, are you seeing him coming along here, trending in the right direction?
It's good to build on. Good for him.
Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet on Elias Pettersson tonight. Had 2 points, and that's the goal you heard. Tipping in a Jake DeBrusk shot, and at the time, made it 3-1. It got the Canucks back in the game. We made it 3-2, but that's as close as they got. Edmonton going on to win 7-3, a stinging home loss for the Canucks. And this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. And we will get to the phone boards coming up in a moment as well. And we'll get to some player audio. Pettersson himself spoke to the media. We'll play that coming up in a bit. You heard the call, though. Jake DeBrusk shooting the puck over and Pettersson tipping it in. And unfortunately, it didn't end up being, you know, as fun as you would have imagined or as good vibes as you would imagine. But it was a cool thing here tonight because Louis DeBrusk, Jake's dad, was at the game, calling the game between the benches as well. And on after hours with Jake and Louis chatting, it's, you know, I'm sure Jake isn't quite as enthused after losing 7-3, you know, having to go on TV, but a pretty cool moment. And, you know, we want to play this clip from, you know, Louis talking to Jake about how his game has changed, because we saw Jake kind of struggle through October, and he's really found his game now, Bick, and he does look like a different player, even, you know, on the shift on the Pettersson goal. Like, he makes a nice play, he throws a nice puck at the net, it's a tippable shot that he throws across. Like, he's been very effective in recent games.
Yeah, and just the level of confidence last game to score that goal. Makes a fantastic play to work around the goalie and score that goal. So you're seeing the flashes now all of a sudden for Jake DeBrusk, and the fact that he's got 5 assists now in the season, he's scoring some goals here. You're starting to see some return on investment and at least provide a sample of what you might grow into. And we were just talking about something like Desharnais, right? Different scales of everything, but progress. Mm-hmm. Are you showing what the project is meant to be? DeBrusk, are you showing what the chance or the investment is supposed to look like? And, yeah, there have been enough signs, and it's improving here fairly rapidly in these last four or five games.
And hopefully it keeps going and really takes off here for the Canucks. And here is Jake DeBrusk with his father, Louis, on After Hours, talking about how his game is improving.
Listen, you weren't getting shots, to be honest with you. That was for me. And when you're playing, when you're rolling around the net and you're getting your opportunities, puck starts to go in for you, right? And I think that's for any good player that's a scorer. If you're not getting your opportunities, you're going to have to change and work a little harder to get your opportunities. I think you've done that in the last few games, and you've created in the offensive zone. The puck's starting to go in for you, no question.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, it's been one of those things where, yeah, that's what you usually tell me. Yeah. Just keep, you know, keep getting the looks. You always worry when you don't get the looks. And if you don't have any shots, then you're kind of doing no favors.
And, you know, for me, it's not just about shots. It's not about throwing the puck at the net from a real sharp angle. It's about moving your feet to get yourself to a better spot, too.
Yeah.
You know, if you really want it, you're going to challenge somebody. You're going to get to that spot to get the shot away. And you've always had a nose around the net, and that's when pucks go in for you.
That is Jake and his father, Louis, on After Hours tonight talking about how shooting the puck more. And we've seen that. Like, in the 3 goals he scored, Bick, which was – he's showing a different array of goals, right? He showed his ability to tip a shot in, a nice shot roofing at the top corner as well, and then showed nice hands tucking a puck in along the post as well. So we know he can score in a variety of ways, but guys like him, ultimately, the secret for great goal scorers, unless you're super efficient, is shooting the puck, honestly. And if you shoot the puck, like, you're going to score. Like, it's really dumb to say, but good scorers shoot the puck a lot, you know?
Just don't aim for the crest more often than not, and you'll do it. But, yeah, he gets the tip in. He shows a bit of flash and dash on that goal yesterday, or the last game. I like what we're seeing here, and I like that they reunited Pettersson and DeBrusk again. I know we had a couple of complaints about it, but if they're both starting to go, and this was the design of the forward group, put them back together. And tonight, Elias Pettersson, as we mentioned, 5 shot attempts, just trying to bring up DeBrusk's. You know, tonight didn't have a shot attempt, which is not great, but you know, we've seen it here improve here recently.
Yeah, it has, and it does need to keep going here, especially if he's going to really work at it and gain some real chemistry and
man,
success.
Man, a real night, a light night on the shot attempts.
Well, I mean, how many was
it's 40 attempts total.
Yeah, and it was when it was 7-3, when it was 7-2, the Canucks only had 18 shots at that point in the third period. It
just
wasn't
for
great.
Context, the Oilers had 57 shot attempts.
Yeah, significantly more. I mean, they were the better team. There's no doubt. I mean, there's nothing anybody would dispute that here tonight. We have a lot of comments and questions, like Ashton and Surrey, about you know, Canucks getting a player like Ryan Lindgren. I don't know if he's available, even though he's an expiring contract. The Rangers have cup hopes, right?
So really like the player.
I like the player
really
as well.
Like the player.
And I like the thinking, though, because you have to think outside the box. And he thinks the Canucks are missing a Dan Hamhuis type. And I think that's a great point. A guy that can do play in every situation, do a bit of everything. They're hard to find, but that's what they're looking for. And I know the other part of the question was from Jose was about, can you flip Desharnais? The thing with Desharnais is he has another year left on his contract. $2 million salary this year, $2 million next year. But as terms of as far as money is owed, it's like $1.7 left and another $2 next year. So it's a lot of money right now for a player that's underachieving. Would you move him for Fabro? Sure, but what motivation would the Predators have to acquire Desharnais for Fabro, who's an expiring contract versus a player who has another year left on his contract? And that's kind of where moving him right now, I don't know if that's really realistic. You know?
Also, a big signing bonus for Desharnais.
For next year?
Well, he got 1.5 for this one.
So it's 500,000 actually, right.
It's 950K next year for a signing bonus as well.
Yeah,
is that going to scare teams off as well?
Those things do matter. Right, they do matter. So we'll see if that comes into the equation or not. Let's go back to the phone boards to take a call, and it's Aiden in Port Alberni. Aiden, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, yeah, I was actually at a local hockey game today, and then I was also checking the score, and I saw it was 3-2 at one point, and then I looked back, and the game was over, and it was 7-3. I'm like, holy crow, what happened? I looked back at the footage, and yeah, they didn't play an all-together game. They kind of just fell off on that third period. But the refs tonight weren't good either. They missed at least, like, 3, like, calls. Like, the refs, I think the refs were garbage tonight, honestly. Give you my opinion. But, hey, you can't win them all after coming off of an amazing road trip. To see that performance was kind of a disappointment. But, hey, it's one game. We'll hopefully bounce back and disappointment tonight, but you know, there's always next game.
I hear you. Thanks for the phone call. That is Aiden in Port Alberni. And I know we spoke about the refs earlier as well and got Brett's take on a couple of calls and non-icing call earlier in the post-game show. And, yeah, not their finest performance, but the Canucks obviously not much better themselves. We mentioned Elias Pettersson, a big topic of conversation here tonight. And Ian McIntyre is going to join us in a couple of minutes. But before we do that, here is Elias Pettersson post-game tonight. He met with the media, had a goal and an assist, but it was in a 7-3 loss. And here is what he had to say.
Yeah, we are good. Pushing second, got some life. Set up us well for the third, but yeah, they come out harder and won anymore.
When you're stuck out there for 2 minutes, and you guys killed the penalty, but that sort of sets things back for you to get back on this, isn't it?
I mean, we got the job done by killing the penalty, but yeah, definitely took some energy off me, but got a good rest and I was ready, but. Yeah, they capitalize on their chances.
What's the difference between tonight and the last 3 games?
Lost today and wins the last 3.
Was there a difference in the way you guys played?
First 2 periods, I liked our game. Definitely second period, we got a pushback. Third, what the answer is for there, not sure. But if you look in video, see what we can do better.
Second period and then a couple minutes longer, give you a little more energy.
Yeah, definitely. We had jumps, but each period is 20 minutes, so we can't rely on that. But either way, we just got to come out better than what we did in the third.
I know not the result you wanted tonight, but how are you feeling about your individual game? You score again, and it seemed like you were all over the puck at times.
Yeah, definitely I felt better personally. But I know I'm still a long way to go to be where I want to be, so I'm just trying to be better every day and better every game.
Your defensive game has been noticeable too, though. I think you made at least one save tonight as well.
Yeah, I'm just trying to be reliable in the defensive end. Everybody wants to do their job, and when it was my time to step up, I just tried to do my best.
That is Elias Pettersson tonight after a 7-3 loss against the Oilers on home ice. Had a goal and an assist. Scored the first goal of the game and assisted on the final goal. First goal for the Canucks tonight and also assisted on the last goal for the Canucks. The 7-3 marker. Pew Suter scoring on the man advantage for the Canucks. So they scored a power play goal, but you know, obviously not even a
consolation goal.
Exactly. It's so it's not that it matters. It's more about, hey, just on record, officially, that's kind of how it went. And when asked about his game, he feels, he said, yeah, I for sure feel better. And we talked about how he looked better as a player, but he also
had that great moment on the PK.
Yeah, that play on McDavid.
First of all, outrageous pass by Leon Draisaitl. It goes through about five bodies all the way to the back post.
Did you also notice how when they had seven goals, Draisaitl was trying to get the eighth goal? He was trying to dummy guys. I wonder if they remember
the 8-1 game.
They were trying to run it up. They weren't giving up once they scored. But, yeah, that was a great play by Pettersson, you know, on McDavid to not allow that tap-in goal. But he acknowledged he can still be better. Like, as much as he's improved, we're still not seeing peak Pettersson. And whether you think that's encouraging after a two-point performance or not, but, yeah, that's kind of where it is. He acknowledges, and you're not going to be overly enthused when you've lost, 7-3 as well on a night like this against the Edmonton Oilers. But it's time to bring in the man we call the closer. He's a triple threat for a reason. You watch him on TV, you read him on digital, you're about to hear him on radio. He
is quadruple threat with his photography as well. Great picture at, in LA.
Ian McIntyre.
Thank you, Dave.
That was a great picture.
I got lucky.
Yeah.
The sun lined up for me at the Griffith Observatory. By the way, highly recommend that. For anyone who hasn't seen it, it's a great outing.
Can we also chat?
Lena's nodding her head, so obviously she's been there.
Can we also chat how Ian texted us, I'll be there in 8 minutes, and it was literally 8 minutes.
Was it?
That's unbelievable.
You're on time.
You know what? I have few talents in the world, as you guys know. I am able, generally, to put the right words in order. So that's one talent. The other talent, I have this sense, and I know this is going to sound ridiculous, I have this sense of knowing the time without looking at the time.
Sure.
You get that when you have deadlines?
It kind of scares my wife sometimes.
But when you work on deadlines, and we work not on the same deadlines as you, but we work on like timelines because we had to hit a break, we have commercial breaks at a certain time. Like when you work on timelines, you just kind of get a sense of time.
Yeah, maybe. It's kind of freaky, though. Like I'll wake up in the middle of the night.
You know what time it is.
And I'll think, what – it's like 3:53, and I'll look, and it's 3:58 or something. I don't know how I
hear you.
How I know that.
Is picking the right words more important, or is picking the right words more important than putting the words in the right order?
The order, I would say, is more important, because if you care about writing, then you have to care about grammar.
Right.
Right. To an extent, grammar evolves. I love how you guys are redirecting. You guys are redirecting the show.
Sometimes I'm all for it.
Yeah. I'm all for it. I'm going to redirect again. I'm going to get back to the taco truck pretty soon.
Well, we have people texting in asking us, like, we need an update on the taco situation. But anyways.
Okay. So the writing, like, I'm old school, as you probably know. So the writing's important. And the grammar is important, even though it evolves. But then if you can choose interesting words and put together an interesting sentence that is also grammatically correct, even takes care of itself. Even better. So that's you know, I found my calling. I found the one thing I'm really good at, because I don't think this time estimate is going to lead to anything.
Yeah.
I don't think I can monetize that.
Well, I could have made a joke, because I mean the Canucks have given up the first goal in 7 straight games, so they would stand to start on time as well.
Yes. Very good.
Circuses and carnivals.
Very good. But just
you could work we'll
transition stick to your game. Broadcast job though, okay?
Well, transitioning to the game is what I'm trying to do.
All right. So the taco truck, I was thinking about this on the way over.
Okay.
On Thursday night, the taco truck was a want. I really wanted a quesadilla. Right. Tonight, I feel like it's a need. I need comfort food after witnessing what I did in the third period, because it makes no sense from what I witnessed in California, especially the last two games, and particularly on Thursday, because that's, you know, the Kings are a legitimate opponent. And, you know, how the Canucks played, I mean, their two worst games this year have been their last two home games. Their two, arguably their two best games were their last two road games.
Yeah.
So it's hard to make sense of tonight. We'll see. I think tonight will make more sense on Tuesday when we see how they play, because I suspect they'll come out much more focused and sharp. I don't think they're going to be chasing the game like they were tonight against Calgary. And if they are, that tells us something as well. But if the Canucks do kind of regroup and they come out and they play better, I'm inclined to think this was just one of those nights. You know, the team has had the great road trip. They have been on a pretty good roll, although, again, you can't overlook that 6-0 game against Jersey before the road trip. And tonight, whether it was energy, whether they, you know, had to work so hard to recover from being 3-0 down, even though they got the two goals quickly, you know, that takes a lot of energy when you're chasing a game. And we know that they were chasing the game from the start because they gave up a goal less than 3 minutes in. And then they're just out of gas. I'd like to think that that's what it was. And then, you know, everything's connected. So if you don't have the energy, now your legs aren't moving. If your legs aren't moving, you're not getting to the places you should be. So now you're making plays, trying to cover up for these other deficiencies. And it just seemed like things snowballed in the third. And I wouldn't use that term in writing, because that's a cliche, and I try to avoid those. But there are, a journalism professor said at the end of each story, before you file it, you should hunt down and kill any cliches that you see.
Yeah,
but Dan Jenkins, famous sports writer in the U.S., Sports Illustrated and other publications, said that cliches are okay. So I wouldn't ask people to choose between what I advise and what Dan Jenkins advises, except that always stuck with me from journalism. Where did I kind of got off on a tangent there. Where was I going before?
It started with need and want of a quesadilla.
Need and want of a quesadilla.
And then we got here.
Well, I mean, the juxtaposition between...
I'm rambling so much, maybe I could be president of the United States.
The juxtaposition between the two games on the road trip and also the two games we've seen here, the last two games, respectively, on the road trip versus home.
It is really hard to make sense of that. And I think that's what the players are trying to process, and they'll work on it tomorrow in practice. Like, what happened to us between LA and Vancouver? What happened on Friday? My goodness. You know, to go from, if not their best game, their most impressive game this season, that win in LA, to come out and, you know, this wasn't quite as bad, I think, as the New Jersey game. I mean, they were 3-2 in the third period, but not very good. And that's hard to make sense of. And again, that's why I say, If they have a good practice, they come out, they play well, they win on Tuesday, even if they don't win, but they play well against Calgary and they don't hurt themselves like they did tonight, I think this game will be fairly easy just to kind of dismiss as one of those that crop up over the course of 82. But, you know, you don't want to let this fester. And I think the disconcerting thing is that they've not played well at home generally. Right, they. I mean,
one
win in regulation, a couple of loser points. One of those loser points they were lucky to get. The other one they completely gave away a point. They should have had both. But the bottom line is, they've been a much better team on the road than they've been at home. And these last two games, in particular, at home, against good teams, even though the Oilers are scuffling again. And by the way, the Canucks are the first good team the Oilers have beaten this year. Right, they haven't, other than Calgary at the start, and Calgary's coming back to earth. Edmonton hadn't beaten anybody with a winning record, so the Canucks are a good feather in their cap. Another cliche I wouldn't put in writing, but this is radio. Who cares what
it
we
doesn't
say?
Doesn't matter. Right? Yeah, we say so many words.
Is that home road thing just a total anomaly to you, or is it?
Well,
something.
I mean,
greater?
It's we're 13 games. In, are we 13 in
tonight?
Yes, 13 in. I'm getting mixed up because I know it's they've got one win in six home games, and they've won their last six road games, but they lost their first road game. So that's the 13th game. I keep in my head thinking it's 12 because I'm not as good at arithmetic as I am at English, as you know. I think it's just that, you know, you can't have these games where you're not close. And these are kind of measuring stick games for Vancouver. When you play, you know, the Hughes Bowl and the Devils, who are supposed to be a big thing in the Eastern Conference this year, and the Oilers, who went to beat the Canucks in the playoffs and went on to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup. So these are games that you really want to be dialed in, because it seems like they represent more than simply the 2 points available that night. And the Canucks weren't close in either of these games against New Jersey and Edmonton. They were only close on the scoreboard. I mean, it was a good fight back, but really when you look at the analytics, and I know you've done that already, Sat.
Well, this one was,
you know,
I mean,
hours.
All we did was parse through it. I mean,
it wasn't close.
It was really analytics. From the first period on. We
chatted about this. The first period high dangers look a little funny because they came at the end of that power play, so the even strength number is getting boosted up because of what happens on the end of the power play, but. Certainly, the Canucks didn't create enough on their own tonight.
No, they barely had chances.
No,
right?
and in the third period especially, right? It wasn't just that Edmonton was pouring in these goals, but what were the Canucks doing at the other end? Nothing.
Well, exactly.
Nothing. They had you know, two shots for about 15 minutes, and they got two more shots at the end on that garbage time power play goal. So it just, I don't know what. I really don't know what to make of it, and again, I don't think they will entirely know what to make of it. Hopefully they come back strong on Tuesday and you can just sort of park this one.
Well, I think what they really need is to have both their centers going at the same time against bigger opposition. Like tonight, Pettersson was better, Miller struggled, and you got to see him on the road a lot closer than we get to see him here. He looked labored at times, his skating. You know, we know when he's on top of his game, he's moving quick, he has the burst. I wouldn't say lazy necessarily, but, you know, he's not quite moving his feet as much. The turnovers, some bad ones, especially the one on the third goal where he throws it up the middle and Arvidsson ends up scoring the other way. How did he look on the road to you, and does it look like he is a laborer to some degree right now?
Well, we know that he was playing with something early on. We suspected it was a wrist or elbow or something, because there was the one game he took almost no face-offs, but he has been taking face-offs regularly. I think he took 25 of them in Anaheim. He went 18-7, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, on Tuesday. So if that was the problem, it hasn't seemed to be a problem. I thought he was fine on the road. He maybe has lacked a little bit of that dynamicism.
The burst that he has.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
That we saw last year. But I think he still, for the most part, has been playing well. The thing that surprised me tonight, and I wonder, you know, we're talking about what the players will process. What the coaches process is different, because they make a lot of decisions that they have to process rather than just simply what they saw on the ice. And I wonder about the decision to change the top two lines so much. And I know that Tocchet said this morning this was sort of a matchup decision to because they were going to have you know, McDavid and Miller and Pettersson ended up mostly, I think, Nugent Hopkins. At least that seemed to be what they were trying to do. But, you know, they played so well in the road trip, I don't know that I would have changed guys around. Obviously, you had to make a change because Besser was out, and I didn't think Hoglander had a very good game tonight as the guy who got to play in the top six because of that. But, you know, Garland had looked so good with Pettersson, and, you know, Miller had been scoring, or sorry, DeBrusk had been scoring with Miller. Just kind of, I would leave those pairs. I wouldn't have moved DeBrusk. I wouldn't have basically swapped them and put Garland up, and you also move Suter up from Pettersson's line. And now I think maybe they were overthinking it a bit tonight, but it's easy to say that when they lose 7-3, if they'd won 7-3 and they'd held McDavid and Dreisaitl in check, then we'd be saying, you know, what a brilliant move. And we know that Tocchet and the staff has made a lot more moves correctly than they've gotten wrong. But I just wonder, given how things went on the road trip, if it was necessary to change as much as they did. And even, you know, having Juulsen on the fourth line. And I think Tocchet said something post-game about, you know, I forget whether he used the word precaution, but he indicated that maybe they had another defenseman.
But he stopped himself short of getting into detail. He said one
jumped
guy
out of the train of thought. But he certainly was
about to say something and caught himself. But yeah, there seems to be something going on with somebody.
So maybe that was necessary just in case somebody couldn't go, and now you can put Juulsen on defense. But you know, Juulsen at forward instead of Archdeep Baines, you know, that's not really going to give you much. It does make him available for you, mm-hmm. and in theory helps your penalty kill, although it needed more help tonight. But I just wonder about the amount of changes that they made beyond having to find a replacement for Besser alongside JT Miller.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Ian, we'll leave it at that for the post-game show. Fantastic stuff.
So you got 6 minutes to go. What are you trying to do?
Well, no, I mean, usually we're done at 25, but when you end up showing up, we're supposed to be out at 25, 26.
Here I come over, and you're just trying to throw me off the show.
Plus, you already told us
we got in. You got in early today. You got in early today. You got in, like, you know, four or 5 minutes early. So if you would have came in your normal time, we usually push an extra 4 or 5 minutes.
Maybe it's still taco time then.
Maybe.
There's a place.
So, by the way, did you eat a taco?
I had Mexican food a couple of times in L.A., but I did not get
the late night craving.
The quesadilla.
The quesadilla that got away
from the taco truck with the big chicken on it.
But you did satisfy your craving.
Yes. I went to my hole in the wall place in Santa Monica.
Oh, I love it.
On Wednesday night.
Well, I'm glad, especially with your son being on the trip.
Steak fajita.
It's a good time.
Is that real? I guess that's real. Yeah, enough Mexican food. Yeah.
Close enough.
You know, I went to Mexico. I know you're trying to get off the air here, Seth. I went to Mexico when I was 12 because my slightly younger brother, who was a really good soccer player, he had the athletic talent in the family. His team was playing in tournament there. And I went to Mexico. We got billeted with families. And I ate all kinds of street food. And it was fantastic. And there used to be a thing called Montezuma's Revenge.
Right.
People would get an upset tummy, and you'd have to go to the bathroom a lot. Did I just say tummy?
Yeah.
I think I did.
Is that also
And I had none of that. It was perfect. And to this day, I still haven't had Mexican food as good as I had off of, like, street carts in Mexico City when I was 12 years old.
Would you risk it again, though? That's the question.
Yeah, absolutely I would.
He built up the character of it. Ian, great stuff as always. I look forward to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca. Fantastic. And we look forward to chatting with you on Tuesday after the Canucks play the Calgary Flames.
I'll look forward to that as well.
Right, thank you very much as always. He's Bick Nizar. I'm Satyar Shah. Thank you all for listening, being part of the show. Special thanks to Lena here at the rink and Eddie back at the studio. And all you listening and participating, this has been the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.